Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 224 event, which takes place in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we had no premium bets for UFC Fight Night 128, but we did go 0-1 on our free bet for the under 2.5 rounds for Kevin Lee versus Edson Barboza to lose one unit. Back to the present, UFC 224 features a 13-fight card and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, FX, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a middleweight contest between Marcus Perez, who is 9-1, and James Bochnovic, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Perez opens minus 200, the comeback on Bochnovic at plus 170. Right now, looking at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu. Currently at BetDSI, it is minus 300 for Perez. Comeback on Bochnovic is at plus 240. So line margins have tightened up, and the line has moved up towards Perez. So people are basically fading Bochnovic in this spot here. You can't blame him. I mean, based on Bochnovic's UFC debut, he did take that fight on short notice against Giles, and I mean, Giles put it on him. I mean, Bochnovic comes in with a pretty good reputation, trains with Ben Rothwell, and he's a well-rounded fighter, as is Rothwell. So they got some stand-up in their game, definitely has some ground game, and he's got some length. I mean, one of the best features or best attributes that Bochnovic has is actually, I mean, he's going to be a big middleweight. He is dropping to 185, I should say, from 205. Now, he's fought at middleweight before in the past, so he's coming back down to middleweight, which I think is going to suit him even better, because I think, again, light heavyweight in the UFC is just, even though the division's a little bit weaker, it's, I think, a little bit too much for Bochnovic. So I think down here in middleweight, he'll probably fare a little bit better, but still, I mean, with that length, he knows how to use it a little bit. He's just not overly effective with it. So on the feet, he's got okay striking. He's aggressive. He doesn't have a bunch of power to go along with that striking. And he's susceptible to getting clipped, and he's susceptible to getting taken down. And then on the ground, he does have a pretty good jiu-jitsu game. Even off his back, he goes for triangles. And he could get you in some trouble, you know, with his submission skill. But I think he's going to run into just a better overall fighter in Perez. Again, and if you look at Bochnovic's competition level from day one, it's really not that impressive. I mean, outside of the UFC, he's fought low-level competition, where Perez, I think, is a little bit more impressive with the resume that he has coming into the UFC. Now, of course, Perez did suffer a loss in his official UFC debut to Anders. Eric, obviously, Anders is a very good fighter. I know he lost to Machida, but still, I think we're going to see a lot of good things from Anders in the future. So that's not necessarily a bad loss for Perez. I think Perez is going to get back on track here. He is a well-rounded fighter, like I said. He was actually on The Ultimate Fighter a while back, and he got submitted on that show. So he does have a little bit of a weakness on the ground, and Bochnovic can maybe look to possibly exploit that if he gets positioned on Perez. But overall, again, Perez, offensively, he is pretty good on the ground. I think he is a little bit better and a little bit more of an effective striker on the feet as well. So he's going to have a little bit of speed. I think he is the better finisher of the two, and he's faced better competition. So I'm more confident in Perez in this spot here. I do understand why the people are betting him up. Now, where the line is right now, I think it's a tad bit high because Perez isn't really that good, but he still should get the win here. I mean, I think – I shouldn't say Perez isn't that good, but I think he's still improving and he's getting better, but he's just not a 3.5-to-1, 3-to-1 type of favorite right now where he is. I think the line should be a little bit closer because I'm expecting Bochnovic, at least in the first round, to probably give Perez a little bit of trouble. Now, I should mention that as well for Bochnovic. He doesn't really get out of the first round at all. I mean, I think Giles was the first time he's ever been out of round one, so I don't expect this fight to last too long. If this fight ends, it's going to end quickly. I mean, I think probably in round one, Perez finishes Bochnovic, or if Bochnovic does pull off the upset win, it's going to be early on as well. So my pick is Perez. He's probably going to finish Bochnovic in the first round is my guess.
Looking at Bochnovic, I mean, historically, he was a can crusher throughout his run to get into the UFC. And then he faced some reality against Giles, and he just did not fare well in that fight. Perez, at least, I mean, he's faced some tough competition along the way. He pulled off a big upset to become the RFA or LFA champion at, I think it was light heavyweight or middleweight. So, I mean, the guy definitely has some skill. He's got some respectable striking and a very good ground game. And I think Bakhnovic just won't be able to keep up with him. Maybe in the first round, Bakhnovic will have some problems for him because Bakhnovic is a very big, strong guy, and Perez will have to kind of figure out his size. But after, I would say, even the first 3 or 4 minutes, if Bakhnovic has not knocked Perez out, which I doubt because Perez went the distance against Eric Anders in his UFC debut, and Anders is significantly better than Bakhnovic, then I think that Perez will grind this out and probably submit Bakhnovic along the way, probably in round two. So my pick is going to be Marcus Perez. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Alberto Mina, who is 13-0, taking on Ramazan Ameev, who is 16-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ameev opens minus 210, the comeback on Mina at plus 160. Right now, looking over at betdsi.eu, minus 200 on Ameev, and Mina is at plus 160. So a lot of margins have tightened up. Two-way action coming in on this fight, and it looks like it's staying steady across the board. So pretty solid line on the opener overall. And it is a tough fight. It's a competitive fight. I mean, you have two guys that are definitely prospects in 170-pound in the welterweight division. Of course, Ameev is moving down to welterweight for the first time ever in his career. Obviously, he's been fighting up at middleweight. He had a very impressive debut at middleweight against Sam Alvey. Because it's never an easy fight when you have to face a guy like Sam Alvey in the UFC. So he was able to get the job done there, mixing up his takedown ability with his wrestling and his striking skill as well. He's got pretty good Ameev, has pretty good boxing. He's got some power on the feet. He does have some really good grappling to go along with it with his wrestling. So he's a very complete fighter. That's why he's a legit prospect at 170 pounds, and I think he's making the drop. So matched up against Mina. Mina's another prospect at 170 pounds that we've been waiting to see for a while. I mean, the guy's been out for over 2 years. And the funny thing is, yes, there were some injuries that occurred along that time, but more than anything else, I mean, reading up on it, it looks like Mina was just kind of on the shelf. The UFC didn't offer him a fight. So there was no exact reasoning behind his time off other than, you know, like I said, he just didn't get offered a fight. So, I mean, Mina was pretty frustrated, I think, there for a minute as well. And I have to say that he did get offered, I believe, Aliyev at one point, but Aliyev had to pull out of the fight. So something along those lines. So basically, Mina was sitting waiting for the UFC to call him, and I guess he didn't speak up and get on the ball to make it happen either. But his skill set is something else, man. The guy's a very aggressive fighter. He's fun to watch. He's been a nice little streak in his own right. I believe he's 3-0 right now in the UFC, and he's a finisher. I mean, the guy has a grappling-based background, but he's more than that. And in fact, in the UFC, what he's displayed more than anything else is actually his striking skill. Now, he's a little bit sloppy, a little bit overly aggressive at times, but man, he does have some power, and he's got some accuracy to go along with it. So he clips you, you could be in some serious trouble. Now, again, on the ground, the guy's a stud as well. He can submit you. He's got good wrestling, good scrambling ability as well. So the matchup with Ameev here is definitely a fun one to watch, and it might be one of the best fights on the entire card. So I'm really looking forward to this. So with the time off, with the way these guys match up and with the conditioning of Mina, I mean, that's what I think is one of his biggest flaws. I mentioned his aggressiveness. Well, he puts so much into every punch that he throws and trying to finish you that he does wear down relatively fast. His conditioning has improved. If you watch him fight by fight, he has gotten a little bit better, but still, as the fight progresses now, he did go against Akiyama. He went into the cards, into the third round. He started slowing up finally in round three, and you know, he had some trouble as the fight went a little bit. But early on in that fight, he was really good. So I did see some improvements in Mina's overall conditioning, but that's still an issue. So for me, I'm going to lean a little bit towards Ameev because I think stylistically he's going to probably hang in there enough. I mean, Mina's going to give him fits, but I think as the fight progresses a little bit, Ameev will start taking over and probably – outpoint Mina, maybe grind him out a little bit more. He's going to have to be careful, obviously, because Mina's so good on the ground as well. But I think Ameev probably edges this out. So great fight. Looking forward to it. I'm going to pick Ameev to get the W here.
Alberto Mena is a talented fighter, but you look at who he faced, and it wasn't exactly the cream of the crop in the welterweight division. I'd say Akiyama was probably the toughest battle, but that was also Akiyama near the end of his career, trying to stay relevant by dropping down to the welterweight division. Emiev, I think he's pretty dangerous. I mean, this guy has a strong grappling, and in his UFC debut, it wasn't the prettiest fight, but he did outwork Sam Alvey and win an ugly decision. Emiev is a guy that, you know, swings hard. He's not a great striker. I think Mena should be the better striker of the two, but I think Emiev can put a lot of pressure on Mena. I mean, Mina's 36 years old. He hasn't fought in over 2 years, almost 3 years, and he has had a history of conditioning issues, so those issues are not going to suddenly be solved now that he's even older. So I think that Emiev is just going to be a bit stronger, and realistically, with Emiev dropping down a weight class after the UFC debut where he beat Alvey, I think that he's going to be in a good position here. I mean, as long as that weight cut goes well, Emiev should be able to get the grappling going if he wants it, get some top position, as long as he can avoid Mina's submission game. And I think that he can just wear Mena down. So this is, I think, a very good stylistic matchup for Emiev. And while Mena is undefeated, I think that that first loss is happening here, even though it is in Brazil. So my pick is the Russian. Now moving back up to 185 pounds, we have Talis Elitis, who is 27-8, taking on Jack Hermanson, who is 16-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Hermanson opened -210, the comeback on ladies at +160. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Hermanson -155, the comeback on ladies is at +125. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and we have action coming in Elitis' way. That's a no-brainer to me. I mean, the line definitely opened up too high, and it's still probably a little bit high. Stylistically, this is a tough fight for Hermanson. I mean, I know a lot of people are believers in his game, and man, he does look impressive. When Hermanson's able to implement his game plan, which in most cases is getting the fight to the floor, taking his opponent down, getting position, and just starting pounding away. I mean, he gets you in at top control, and he gets position on you, and he does finish fights, whether it's by submission or ground and pound. So Hermanson is one of those guys that he gets you to the floor, he usually finishes the job. But you're talking about Elitis here. Elitis is a better jiu-jitsu practitioner than Hermanson is. So it's not going to be an easy task for Hermanson to get Elitis to the floor and do what he does best and just pound away. Because I think Elitis, even if Hermanson's able to get him down, I think Elitis is going to give him some fits on the ground, manage to scramble himself back up or reverse things on him. Elitis just has the better pure jiu-jitsu. So Hermanson's not going to want to probably play that game all that much. And then on the feet, I honestly think Elitis has the better striking skill as well. Hermanson can be aggressive, but he's a little bit too tentative. His striking doesn't flow as much as Elitis does. So Elitis through the years, if you watch his progression, he's definitely became a more confident and just a better overall striker. I mean, he's capable of landing harder punches. So what I think here, Elitis is actually the better overall fighter. I know he's 36 years old. Hermanson's the younger fighter. And again, he's the one that people are kind of hyping and maybe the next guy that's going to, you know, keep on moving up that ladder at 185 pounds. But I don't think Elitis is quite done yet. And I think stylistically, this is just a nightmare matchup for Hermanson. So I'm going to go Elitis. I think Elitis can beat him on the feet. I think Elitis probably gets him to the ground. He might out wrestle him as well. And then obviously, like I just mentioned, he's a better jiu-jitsu practitioner as well. So across the board, I think Elitis is just a little bit too much for Hermanson, and it's going to probably show on fight day. So that's my pick, Elitis to win.
Yeah, and I agree. Hermanson is a bit one-dimensional. I mean, this is a guy that is at his absolute best when he can secure takedowns and then just start beating the hell out of people from top position. His two most impressive victories in the UFC were where he got top position and then got TKOs on the ground. And that's just not going to happen against Talis Elitis. Elitis has a pretty good wrestling, an incredible Brazilian jiu-jitsu game, and you know, people just don't really take him down and win fights against him that way. When people beat Elitis, they are typically outstriking him. And while Hermanson does have a bit of a striking background, I mean, he is at his best with ground and pound, not really the stand-up exchanges. I think Lidus actually is a decent enough striker that he'll present some problems for Hermanson. Lidus has some power, as he's showcased with some impressive knockouts in his UFC return. He's kind of settled down in that department as he's started to face some better strikers, like when Gegard Mousasi was able to really pick him apart, and Brad Tavares most recently. But Jack Hermanson is not Gegard Mousasi or Brad Tavares. I think Lidus, if he wants to, can press the pace and outstrike Hermanson. And if it does go to the ground, I think Lidus will be the one in control. And I just don't really see why Hermanson is getting so much love here. I mean, he's coming off of a fight where he ate a huge body kick or body shot from Thiago Santos and ended up getting finished at the end of the first round. So it's been proven that when Hermanson faces a good striker, he, you know, isn't as good either. So I think Lidus actually is the better stand-up fighter than Hermanson, believe it or not. And I think Lidus wins this fight. So Lidus is my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a welterweight contest between Warley Alves, who is 12-2, and Sultan Aliyev, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Alves open -260 to come back on Aliyev at +180. Right now over at BetDSI, it's -230 for Alves, and the comeback on Aliyev is at +180. So line margins have tightened up a little bit again, and there is two-way action on this fight. Tough one. I mean, honestly, in this matchup, Alves has a lot of good things going for him. I think he's the more fluent striker. He's definitely faster on the feet. I think he's got more knockout potential on the feet as well. Both these guys have some power. Both these guys are really strong fighters. So I think, you know, whoever lands clean first can definitely do some damage, but I still favor Alves in the striking game overall. I think he is the better striker, but the problem with Alves is you get a couple minutes in a round two, the guy's done. I mean, his cardio and conditioning is toast. I know that it seemed to have gotten a little bit better as of late, because he ended up winning his last fight by decision, but that was against a gentleman that was taking the fight on short notice, coming in, stepping in, and it still went to the scorecards. And of course, his conditioning did look a little bit better there, but I think that's a little bit smoke and mirrors. I think Alves still has severe cardio issues, and against Aliyev, that's not a good thing, because if Alves can't get rid of him. I mean, in round two, round three, Aliyev is such a grinder. He's going to be consistently looking for those takedowns and just to kind of pin him up against a cage and grind away and then, you know, drop some bombs along the way. So this is going to be a very grueling fight for Alves if he can't finish him. Now, I'm saying that because Alves has a couple paths to victory here. I think Alves, again, he is the better striker, so he can land on the feet early on against Aliyev and get him out of there that way. Or even that guillotine choke. Aliyev is going to come in for takedowns, and Alves is ultra slick with getting his choke in place quickly, and maybe he could tap him out that way. But outside of that, if Alves is not able to finish Aliyev early on in the fight, I think he's going to be in some trouble here. And I think actually Aliyev is going to take over and probably get the W. So I have a little bit more confidence in Aliyev. I know a lot of people believe in Alves, and he was supposed to be the next big thing again at 170 pounds from the Ultimate Fighter. I just think it's overhyped. He's just a little bit overrated. And I just haven't seen him get over that hump. And again, and a lot of it has to do with conditioning. If his conditioning was up to par, then he would be a lot better off in his career right now, I think. So I'm not a believer in Alves yet. I think Aliyev is going to be a little bit too much for him. And if Aliyev doesn't get caught, he probably wins a fight. So I'm going to side with Aliyev. I'm going to take the underdog to pull off the upset win here. Again, not an ultra confident pick, because I see some paths to victory definitely for Alves, but I still don't trust him enough here. So if you guys are laying the chalk on this fight, I wouldn't recommend it. You stay away from it if you don't like it, you know, or it's a dog or pass situation. For me, I prefer a dog or pass situation. So my pick is Aliyev to win the fight.
And I'm going to go the other way. I'm a little concerned, obviously, because if Alves does not take Aliyev out, he has had a history of conditioning issues, and Aliyev could take this fight over with his wrestling and win a decision. That is a very probable path to victory for Aliyev. The thing is, though, for Aliyev to get a takedown, I mean, he's going to have to risk his neck, most likely. And Warley Alves has one of the best guillotines in the UFC. I mean, he finished Colby Covington with a guillotine. He had Usman in some trouble with the guillotine. He's finished multiple other fights with his guillotine. So if Aliyev wants to go into that world, Alves is more than happy to try to finish him with the risk of the takedown. So, on top of that, Aliyev is not much of a striker. He's pretty sloppy. So while Alves isn't the greatest striker, I think Alves should be the better striker of the two. And Aliyev has been hurt on the feet. I think Alves can finish Aliyev in a stand-up fight. And while Alves does slow down, there's a decent chance here that Alves can finish Aliyev before he starts to slow down. So I think Alves can submit Aliyev. I think Alves can knock out Aliyev. And potentially, with Aliyev not having much finishing ability, there's a decent chance that Alves could win the first two rounds before he starts to slow down, and Aliyev does not get a finish in the third round and loses a decision. So, I think that this is a winnable fight for Warley Alves. While he hasn't obviously been as impressive as his potential stated coming out of the Ultimate Fighter Brazil, Alves is still a pretty good fighter. And I think that his peripherals are decent enough here that he should be able to get the win. So I'm going to disagree with Nick here. I'm going to go Warley Alves, especially in Brazil. Now, moving on to the FX prelims, we have Elizu Zaleski dos Santos in a welterweight contest against Sean Strickland. Zaleski is 18-5, and Strickland is 18-2-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Strickland opened minus 135, Zaleski dos Santos minus 105. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Zaleski dos Santos minus 136, Strickland's at plus 106. So line flipped, action coming in Zaleski's way. A lot of people are on the Zaleski train right now. I mean, it's hard to deny. The guy has definitely looked good in his fights. He's the type of fighter that's actually gotten better with each fight against solid competition. And now, how awesome does that Max Griffin look, or win look now? I mean, Max Griffin, that was a very tough, hard fought win for, Zaleski dos Santos. And of course, Max Griffin coming off of a big win as of late as well. So that's why I'm saying it makes Zaleski dos Santos's win look that much better. So he's good, man. I mean, the guy's definitely a solid fighter everywhere. I think his best attribute is definitely on the feet. He's a really good striker. He has power. He mixes things up well. He can beat you with his hands or his feet. He mixes in some wrestling, and he's got a jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. Now, he's not the type of fighter that's going to consistently look to take you down and sub you, but he's going to look to finish you and put a beating on you, whatever it takes to do so. So he's an aggressive fighter that is a finisher that is capable of grinding fighters out as well. So a lot to like about Zaleski dos Santos, no doubt. But he has his hands full against Strickland here. I think Strickland's another guy that's improving fight by fight. I mean, his only setback as of late was against Usman, and we all know Usman's really close to getting a title shot in his own right, and he's one of the better wrestlers, grinders, at 170 pounds. So I think you can kind of take it easy on Strickland and understand that loss a little bit. Outside of that, though, I mean, Strickland has been a monster out there. He's been you want to say – I shouldn't say monster, I guess, because he's not as aggressive at times as we all want him to be. But, I mean, he's been able to implement his game plan and his style. Now, he's long for the division. He usually has a little bit of reach on people. His striking is very solid. It's getting better, actually. He's been training with the likes of Raymond Daniels, and he's just getting a variety of different looks from people. And his stand-up game is definitely coming around. I mean, he's utilizing that reach well enough where he flicks out that jab fast. It's accurate. It could be effective, and then he could follow up behind it. So Strickland's striking is getting better. But for me, it's his complete game. It's his wrestling. It's his ability to grind. It's his ground and pound that he has. And it's his submission skill as well. So I like his complete game. And I think he's still going to be a little bit too much for Zaleski dos Santos at this point. It's going to be a very competitive fight. It's going to be a very close fight. But I think that Strickland right now is just a tad bit better in his overall MMA game, and I think it's going to probably end up showing as this fight progresses. Zaleski dos Santos, another one of these guys, is as the fight progresses, he does tend to slow down a little bit. Obviously he throws a lot into his punches as well. So I think it's another area where, even though it's going to be maybe a little bit closer early on, as the fight progresses, I think we see Strickland kind of pulling away a little bit and getting the W here, possibly by finish or on the scorecards as well, even if it's in hostile territory. So for me, I have a little bit more faith in Strickland's game. I think he is making those improvements that he needs to make to get even better. So his well-rounded game should get him the W here, even though if it's going to be a hard-fought battle. So the pick is Strickland to get the slight upset win.
Now, I've definitely learned not to count Elizu Zaleski dos Santos out. I mean, the guy just has a well-rounded game. that he can adapt to multiple people in multiple different styles and pick up wins. He can strike with guys that aren't great strikers but have good ground games. He can go to the ground with guys that are good strikers. He is very adaptable. The problem is, I think Sean Strickland just has a bit too much to offer here. Strickland is a good enough striker, and he has a solid wrestling game to avoid being put on his back and out-grappled. So Zaleski Dos Santos is going to have to stand and trade with this guy, and I don't know if Zaleski is the better striker. I mean, Strickland has a good jab, and he has a little bit of pop in his hands, as evidenced by the Alex Garcia win. So I think with Zaleski getting his skill set cut in half entering this fight, Strickland, if he wants to, could take this fight to the floor. I don't see him getting submitted or anything. And obviously, Strickland can stand and trade here. My only issue is Strickland doesn't use that height and reach advantage properly and aggressively enough, and maybe allows Zaleski Dos Santos to dictate the pace. But Strickland is a good enough striker that he should be able to control on the feet as well, especially when you have that reach advantage and a good jab. That does, to me, say that he's going to be in a pretty good position. Like, watching Sean Strickland fight, I mean, his only losses are to two of the best welterweights in the division, Santiago Ponzinibbio and Kamaru Usman, at least in the welterweight division. So I think that he's going to be in pretty good position here. Zaleski Dos Santos is talented, obviously, as I've said, but I just don't think that he'll have an answer for that jab. And I think Sean Strickland, as long as he can make something happen from behind that jab, then he should be able to win a decision at least. So Strickland's going to be my pick. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Davi Ramos, who is 7-2, taking on Nick Hine, who is 14-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hine opened -185, the comeback on Ramos at +145. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Ramos at -145, the comeback on Hine is at +115. So line margins have tightened up and the line flipped. All the early action is coming in on Ramos's way. Now, of course, he is a very hyped fighter. Ramos, before he even made his UFC debut, I mean, a lot of people were hearing some good things about him. I mean, of course, Ramos also competed once in Bellator. Now, it is necessary to mention that he did lose to David Rickles, which is actually one of the better guys at lightweight in the Bellator, on the Bellator roster. So it's not necessarily a bad loss. And I believe he took that fight on short notice, and that was back in 2014. So since that time, though, I think he's made a lot of improvements in his overall game. Now, of course, he made his UFC debut at welterweight against Moraes. He lost a decision there. He took that fight on short notice, but then he bounced back at lightweight against Gritzmacher, and in a really good fight. I mean, it was a back and forth fight there. He was looking really good. He did start to slow down. This is another guy, man. These Brazilians sometimes, he started to slow down to the point where round two got interesting against Gritzmacher, and then round three, actually, he had to get the job done and ended up choking Gritzmacher out. But, man, Ramos was definitely slowing down in that fight, and that's one of his flaws, and that's one thing that he can't afford to do against Nick Hine in this fight here is slow down, because I think Ramos does have several advantages in this fight. I mean, obviously, we're talking about the pure jiu-jitsu game. He is a jiu-jitsu fighter that has added stand-up to his game, and his striking, I'll tell you what, his boxing skill has gotten pretty solid. I mean, the guy, when his conditioning is going well, when he's not tired, when he's not exhausted, the guy has speed. He's got clean punches. He's got power behind him. He's got that aggression. I mean, he has knockout power on the feet. There's no doubt. He only has one official knockout on his resume, but the guy has gotten to the point where he's gotten himself solid enough that he could be a threat on the feet. And I think here, out of the two between Hine and Ramos, I think Ramos is actually the better striker. So I know that Hine has a little bit of power, and he's been in there with some solid people striking at him, and he's done okay. But I think if this is a pure striking matchup, Ramos actually has the edge there. And then, of course, the jiu-jitsu stylistic matchup here favors Ramos a little bit as well. But I think Hine's going to be a tough guy to get on the floor and control, and Hine's submission defense is actually pretty solid, as he has a pretty decent jiu-jitsu game as well. So I think what's going to come into play here is, as this fight progresses, if Ramos doesn't get him out of there, if he's not able to finish Hine early on, I think Hine might even take over in round two and round three here as well and pull off the slight upset win. But this is going to be really close on the scorecards. I'm expecting it, if it does get the scorecards, to see a split decision right off here. And, of course, it's in Brazil, so who knows which way this fight's going to go. So I think if Ramos's conditioning holds up, he's going to win this fight, and deservingly so, because I think he is the better fighter of the two. But I think the scorecards, if it makes it there, Hine probably wins. So I'm going to give Hine the benefit of the doubt. I think he's a tough guy to finish. I think it probably does hit the scorecards. So I'm actually going to pick Hine to pull off the upset win. I just don't trust Ramos enough. I mean, he does have the skill again, as I mentioned. I mean, everywhere the fight takes place, he has the ability to finish, but it's his conditioning that just doesn't cut it for me. And against a fighter like Hine, you better be up to par or you're going to get beat. So I'm going to pick Hine to pull off the small upset here as well.
If this fight goes to the floor, I definitely think Ramos has a very good chance of at least controlling Hine, if not finding a path to a submission because of his ADCC grappling background. But I just don't know if it goes to the floor. I mean, Nick Hine is a very experienced judo guy, and those guys have very strong bases. They might be tougher to take down than most top wrestlers. So Hine has had 90% takedown defense in his UFC career so far. So, I mean, if Ramos wants to get this fight to the ground, he is really going to have to fight for it. Now, on the feet, Ramos does have some power. He swings a little wild and crazy at times, but, I mean, he's not, you know, completely incapable on the feet. I actually think that Hine is the better striker, but he doesn't trust his hands enough. Like, he doesn't have a good reach. He has those stubby little T-Rex arms in the lightweight division. But, I mean, he does actually have some decent striking. It's just he will start strong in fights, and then once fighters kind of settle into their range, he does have problems. That happened in the James Vick fight. He was actually looking really good, and then the second Vick started to find his range, Hine ended up losing. So, and that kind of has been something that has happened repeatedly throughout Hine's career a little bit, even though he only has lost a couple times. I think in this fight, though, Ramos is going to have some trouble getting this fight to the floor, and I don't see Ramos really adapting. Like, he doesn't have the skill, the technical skill on the feet to figure out Hine, and I think Hine will land some decent kicks. I think Hine will find a home for his hands. And as long as he stays upright, I think Hine can outstrike Ramos and win a decision. Maybe even get a knockout. I'm not confident about that because Hine really hasn't had a lot of knockout finishes in his career, hardly any. But it is possible if Ramos gets way too aggressive and sloppy on the feet. But overall, I think the safe play for me is Hine by decision, and that's going to be my pick. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Alexei Oleinik, who is 52-11-1, taking on Junior Albini, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Albini open -120, Olenek open -120. So pick them exactly right now over at betdsi.eu. Albini's -161 and Olenek is +131. So no love for the old man. Everybody's betting Albini, the young gun. It's age 27 compared to age 40 on Olenek. And I get it. I mean, Olenek has been one of these guys that's been around the sport for so long that I've said in the past, I wish he kind of made it over to the UFC a lot quicker because I'd like to see Olenek in his prime with the skill set that he has in the heavyweight division to see how far he can really make it. I mean, he's still winning some fights against decent competition along the way at age 40. So I got a ton of respect for this guy. I mean, he's got old man strength. He's got bricks in his hands, even though he's a grappling based fighter. He doesn't have the greatest stand up, but man, when he throws and lands, he could definitely do some damage. So Olenek is one fighter you have to respect, and he's a dangerous guy. He's going to look to take this fight to the floor. Albini's takedown defense has to continue to be solid in order for him to win this fight, to even have a shot, because Olenek on the ground is going to school him. So Albini, overall, he's a pretty solid fighter. I mean, it's not like he's out of his realm completely. He does have a jiu-jitsu game, but I think Olenek's unorthodox style on the ground is definitely going to give Albini some problems. So keep this fight upright, sprawl, brawl, and try to knock him out and be more aggressive. I mean, that's the problem with Albini in his last fight against Andre Arlovsky. Albini has a tendency sometimes to kind of let fighters push him up against the cage and hold him there, and his inactivity level kind of frustrates you. But if he gets off and he starts being aggressive and he starts throwing a little bit, Albini has enough power, he could do some damage. I mean, look at his UFC debut win against Tim Johnson. I mean, that's kind of what got everybody hyped up on Albini. They thought, man, we got another heavyweight coming in here that's fairly young, that has knockout power. Who knows? He might be getting better, you know, all this stuff. And then, of course, he shows up and lays an egg in the Arlovsky fight. So he lost a lot of respect there. But again, the betting community right now is backing him. They have faith in a 27-year-old young gun that has knockout power over Olenek that's age 40 again with a, you know, a guy that's been knocked out five times with a declining type of chin. I think people think that this fight stays upright and Albini probably gets a knockout win. I'm going to probably agree with it. It's not confident though. I mean, I think again, Olenek, he's just a dangerous opponent. And what we've seen from Albini thus far, it's been okay, but not overly impressive either. So this is a nice test for Albini. If he goes out here and fights a little bit more aggressive and gets rid of Olenek, I'll be impressed because Olenek is no easy out. So I'll pick Albini to win. But if you guys are betting this fight, I don't know if I'd lay the chalk right now at this point, especially laying minus 160 to see if Albini wins. I don't think it's worth it. So I would stay away from this fight. But personally, I've got to pick Albini. I'll go with a youth factor here. It's just hard to pick 40-year-olds these days, especially, you know, with so many fights and again, declining type of chin, but definitely respect Olenek. And I think it should be a fun fight. Hopefully it's a fun fight. So the pick is Albini to win.
Yeah, this is a tough fight to call for me. I mean, Albini looked so good in his UFC debut, smashing Tim Johnson. And then he looked so bad in his follow-up fight there against Andre Arlovsky. I mean, which Albini are we going to get? Olenek, he's a veteran, obviously. And if he can get this fight to the floor, he's going to be in great shape. I mean, his ground game is absolutely insane, especially in the heavyweight division. I mean, being able to pull off those Ezekiel chokes without a gi is, I mean, he's the only guy that's able to do it. And he did it in the UFC of all places even. So, that's amazing. But, as we saw, Olenek, with people that can avoid going to the floor with him, with people that can outlast him, he has trouble. I mean, Curtis Blaydes was able to, get top position against Olenek, avoid the submissions, and then just pick up a nasty, brutal TKO. Granted, Junior Albini is not going to want to get takedowns and batter Olenek on the ground. What he wants to do is avoid the takedown and try to batter Olenek on the feet. Olenek is not a terrible striker, though. I mean, he did pick up a knockout, I think, against Jared Rosholt on the feet, so, I mean, he does have some power in his hands, but that is not where he wants to be. So if Albini can get inside the 6-inch reach advantage that Olenek does have, then I think that he has a decent chance of hurting Olenek and maybe finishing him. But, I mean, if Olenek is able to get this fight to the floor, if he can get his hands on Albini, then this becomes a whole different animal. So this fight could go either way. It realistically could. Olenek can definitely win this fight. But I'm going to side with the youth here. Albini hopefully learned his lesson in that last fight against Andre Arlovsky, coming in as a big favorite and then just getting dominated. Olenek does not have Arlovsky's striking credentials, so I think Albini will be in control here. But again, if Olenek can grab a hold of him and get him to the ground, then who knows? But I'm going to side with Albini, although I'm not that confident about it. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Cesar Mutanch Ferreira, who is 13-6, taking on Carl Roberson, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Robertson open minus 130, Ferreira minus 110. Right now looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 128, minus 102. So line margins have tightened up basically where it opened. So it seemed like a solid opener overall. Tough one, honestly, a tough line to set because Robertson is the guy that everybody's hyped about. Everybody's excited about, you know, the up and coming new fresh blood at middleweight that has the striking background, the glory kickboxing background, that actually has a ground game to go along with. And it seems like he's got decent takedown defense. So he's the exciting fighter everybody wants to see progress and kind of work his way up the middleweight ladder. And he's facing a guy that's honestly underrated, and I've underrated him myself throughout his career, Ferreira. Ferreira has a heck of a skill set. The guy is a very talented, athletic, a really solid fighter, great fighter overall. The one problem that he has that hinders him from time to time is definitely his chin. He's a chinny guy, and he's been knocked out. And I believe four of his six losses have been by knockout. So that's his main issue. He's a chinny guy, and he's facing a striker that if he can keep it upright, probably clips him and puts him out. But offensively, Ferreira is something else. I mean, he's, like I said, that's why he's a little bit underrated, because his striking skill offensively on the feet, he has power. He can mix things up well with his kicking and his punching. He's got underrated wrestling. He's got underrated jiu-jitsu. He's a very complete fighter. In fact, he's actually the better fighter of the two. Between Robertson, again, he's getting better. I know he's an experienced striker, but as far as a complete mixed martial artist, Ferreira is actually a level above him right now still, but that might not matter here, because I think Robertson, again, if he could keep this fight upright, and his takedown defense so far looks to be solid. And Ferreira, make no mistake about it, he's going to test that takedown defense. He's going to look to get this fight to the ground, because I think that's his best path to victory, is getting this fight to the floor and trying to exploit Robertson. Even though he showed us some jiu-jitsu and some decent takedown defense, I think Ferreira is really going to push the issue here and see what he can do on the ground. So that's what makes this a kind of a head-scratcher. I think if Ferreira doesn't get knocked out in this fight, he could probably win it, but I'm not confident enough in him to say that he won't get knocked out. Because like I said, the glimpse that we've seen of Robertson's takedown defense and his ground skill has been pretty good. I mean, I think Ferreira is not going to have an easy time getting the fight to the floor. So if that's the case and the fight stays upright, I think Ferreira can have some success on the feet, because like I said, if striking wise, the guy has some power and he's not a bad striker. It's just his defense and his chin is what lets him down. And it's held up the last few fights, so I got to give Ferreira credit for that. He hasn't been knocked out in the last few fights, but he's almost due. How sad that is to say, but you know, and stylistic matchup wise, Robertson's the guy to kind of do that. So not a confident pick here, but I have to lean a little bit more towards the guy's chin I respect and trust a little bit more, and that's Robertson. So the pick is Robertson, but man, I mean, this should be a fun fight and a good test for Robertson as well, because Ferreira, again, he's no bum. He's going to come to fight. He's a good fighter. And if Robertson can get the win here, he's definitely on the right track.
Robertson's really impressed me so far from what I've seen. I mean, the guy comes from a kickboxing background, but half of his wins in MMA have been by submission. Now, obviously, I don't see him submitting Cesar Ferreira, because Ferreira is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. I mean, he is an elite ground fighter, and he's been a lot smarter with his MMA career. I mean, the guy does not have a good chin at all, and he has focused almost exclusively on the ground game, wrestling, trying to avoid stand-up exchanges and protect that chin. And it's been to his benefit. He's actually went on a nice little winning streak for a little bit. So Ferreira is still a dangerous fighter for anybody. And if he can get this fight to the floor, even though Robertson does have some submissions to his credit, I don't think that he can hang with Ferreira on the actual canvas. So I would lean towards Ferreira if it goes to the floor. But if Robertson can use some of those K1, you know, kickboxing credentials that he has, then I think that he's going to be in really good shape. I mean, with Ferreira's chin, Robertson, it's not going to take much. If he can just crack Ferreira on the way in, then it's going to set up a knockout. He might even just knock him out with that first good strike. So that's what I'm leaning here. I just think that while obviously Ferreira has the ground game advantage over the former kickboxer, I think Robertson can hurt him on the way in. And if Robertson can just fight defensively on his back foot and look for that opening, Ferreira probably will give it to him. So as long as Robertson isn't too wild and trying to knock Ferreira out like aggressively and leaves openings for easy takedowns, then I think this is Robertson's fight to lose. So my pick is going to be Carl Robertson, and I think he does win by knockout. Now moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we have a battle of former champions in Brazilian veterans as Vitor Belfort in the middleweight division, who is 26-13 with one no contest, takes on Lyoto Machida, who is 23-8. Now, Nick, What's the MMA odds makers perspective on this one?
This line opened exactly a pick 'em. Minus 120 Machida, minus 120 Belfort. That is not a mistake. This line opened at pick 'em, minus 120 each way. And right now, looking over at betdsi.eu, it is currently Machida at minus 270, the comeback on Belfort at plus 220. That's why I said that. I mean, wow. Pick 'em type of price. Everybody that jumped on Machida early on, hats off to you, because you definitely scooped up some good value. Now, limits, of course, were tiny. I'm not sure how much you guys could get down out there, but still, with that being said, minus 120 to minus 270, you guys definitely got a great line value there. But not an easy fight. And I'm saying that, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here because, I mean, it is what it is. These guys are 41 years old and 39 years old. Belfort 41, Machida 39. These guys have been in the sport for a long time, through so many wars against high level competition. I mean, it's amazing to me that Belfort's actually still competing at this level. I know this is supposedly his last fight. We'll see, you know, how that all plays out here as well. But I mean, amazing credit, the kind of special athletes that both these guys are, that they can perform at this level still. And Machida coming off of a solid win over a prospect in his last fight, and Anders as well. So just when we thought he was kind of done, I mean, he showed us that he still has it in him to win. And then Belfort, of course, beating Marquardt and going to the scorecards there. So both these guys have showed us some life, but I still can't trust either one of them. So that's why this is a difficult fight to pick. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Machida's definitely the more talented fighter. I think he's by far the more diverse striker. He's the more elusive striker. He's got the better conditioning as well. So I'm going to pick Machida to win this fight. There's no question. I understand all the action that came in his way. But now where the price is now, almost laying 3-1, there's no way I would touch Machida. I mean, again, let's not forget his chin has not looked that great recently. And most of the beatings have come on the ground, but still, I mean, he's 39 years old and his Belfort still has a little bit of power. I mean, that's not going to really go. He needs to get the job done early, but you never know. It could happen. So I would probably stay away from this fight where it is now, or it could be a dog or pass situation with Belfort being up this high. Because I just don't have a lot of confidence, even though Machida did pull off a solid win. I mean, it's hard to trust these guys at this point, at this stage in their career, so I would definitely not lay the chalk. So, tough fight to call. I'm going to pick Machida to get the W because I do think he's a better fighter and probably gets a W here. But as far as a bet goes, at minus 270, forget about it. I would stay away from it. So, the pick is Machida, though.
I'm definitely going Machida here. He still has that amazing skill with that defensive style, fighting on the outside edge, looking for that perfect time to strike. Obviously, as he's gotten older, he doesn't quite have the same reflexes that he used to. He doesn't have the durability. So, I mean, if Belfort can crack him early, he can win this fight. It's definitely not out of the realm of possibility. But as long as Machida can avoid that big shot for Belfort, I think that at some point along the way, he takes over and probably knocks Belfort out. Belfort does not have good conditioning. If he does not win early, he usually doesn't win at all. Granted, he has been able to rack up a win or two lately because he's been facing some fellow veterans like, you know, Nate Marquardt. So, but I mean, you go back and you see Belfort against anybody that is still relevant. I mean, he gets smoked. Jacare destroyed him. Chris Weidman destroyed him. Gegard Mousasi destroyed him. Kelvin Gastelum destroyed him. So, if Lyoto Machida can just avoid that big blitz, then I think Machida at some point connects with a heavy left hand and Vitor turtles up and Lyoto Machida puts him away. So my pick is going to be Machida. I think that he does still have something left in the tank after what I saw out of him in the Eric Anders main event. Even if you thought he lost that fight, I mean, he still proved that he can hang with some of those young up-and-comers. And I just don't think Vitor Belfort can. So especially, you know, with all the enhanced drug testing, I think that hurts Belfort more than it hurts Machida, although both of them actually have been hurt by it. But yeah, Lyoto Machida is going to be my pick here. I think that he can win convincingly. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have John Lineker, who is 30-8, taking on Brian Kelleher, who is 19-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmakers' perspective on this one?
Lineker open minus 320. The comeback in Kelleher plus 260. Right now looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Lineker minus 246. The comeback on Kelleher plus 196. So dropped quite a bit on Kelleher. I don't blame people for coming in at the plus 260 line. I mean, Kelleher has really showed a lot. He's another one of these guys that outside of the UFC has gotten better. He's gotten his game to the next level. I mean, he's fought in decent, you know, mid-tier competition before he got into the UFC. And then he proved everybody that he belongs with some of the victories that he's gotten inside the cage thus far as it is. I mean, his only setback was kind of, I don't want to say flukish, because if there's any frustrating part to Kelleher's game, it's a submission defense, and that cost him against Marlon Vera in that fight. So, a fight that he was actually favored to win, and he got caught by Vera. So credit Vera in that fight. But outside of that, I mean, his win right away over Alcantara when he made his debut was very impressive. He was an underdog, obviously, in that fight. And then he followed it up with another impressive win over Stasiak. And then his last, W over Barao. That was a really big win, the biggest win of Kelleher's career. I mean, honestly, think about this. Who would have thought that Henan Barao would be losing to Kelleher at any stage, even if it's 2018 or whatnot? So that's a head-scratcher in its own right, but that tells you what kind of level of decline Barao is on. Not taking anything away from Kelleher, but it is, it's kind of sad to say that Barao is kind of dropped off that bad, but Kelleher deserved to get that win. I mean, you know, Barao's still a dangerous fighter. He's still a capable fighter. Kelleher put the pace on him. He was the one landing the harder punches. He was the one just pushing the pace overall. And, you know, like I said, he deserved to get that win. It was a hard fought battle. And he's going to look to kind of replicate that against Lineker here and get another solid win. Now, it's not going to be that easy. Lineker is still obviously, a fighter that's in the peak of his career at age 27, has a lot left. He's got a granite chin. So if Kelleher is going to come in that strong against a guy like Lineker, Lineker is going to fire back and probably going to clip Kelleher along the way with some hard punches to the body. Obviously, the combos that Lineker throws are devastating. He's got pretty solid takedown defense, so I'm not sure Kelleher is going to be able to get him down like TJ Dillashaw was able to implement that game plan and that style of striking or whatnot with him as well. I mean, that's kind of going to have to be the blueprint for Kelleher to win this fight. He's going to have to kind of imitate what Dillashaw did to Lineker in order to win that fight. And I think it's going to be pretty tough to do that. But that being said, I'm expecting a competitive fight. Lineker didn't look that great against Vera in his last fight. He got the W. He got the job done. I mean, it was a solid win for him, but you could tell he kind of went back his conditioning. By the end of that fight, he was slowing down a little bit. He was worn out a little bit. I believe he sustained before that a broken jaw or something he was recovering from, so he had a little bit of time off there. It just didn't seem like the same Lineker we're used to seeing there, so that's something to keep an eye on. But again, now he's back here against Kelleher, which Kelleher is going to push him to the limit. We're going to really see what Lineker is capable of, I think, in this fight here. So that might not be a good thing for Kelleher, but it should be an exciting fight overall. So I'm going to pick Lineker to get the job done here because I do trust his striking a little bit more. And I mean, he's just such a solid fighter. He's just such a tough fighter to kind of implement your game plan with, because Lineker has that heavy pressure. He consistently pushes forward. He's able to absorb your punches and then just deliver some punishment. So I think he's going to probably implement that same kind of game plan here and get the job done here against Kelleher. But I've been nothing but impressed with Kelleher. And if he can beat Lineker, man, I'll tell you what, the guy's doing some great things, and it'd be another huge win for him on his resume. So the pick is Lineker to get the win over Kelleher, but I'm expecting it to be a very competitive fight and hopefully a fun fight for all of us as well.
And I'm going to agree. I mean, John Lineker, yeah, he's a bit undersized in the bantamweight division. He should be fighting at flyweight, but he just can't make the weight. But he's found a home here. I mean, the only people that have been able to really beat him have been the top contenders. I mean, you look and, you know, it's been TJ Dillashaw. So, I think that Lineker is in a decent position here. He's a very dangerous, powerful bantamweight. Brian Kelleher, his path to victory here is pretty simple. He needs to get this fight to the floor and he needs to work his ground game. Kelleher is a very talented ground fighter. I mean, you saw that with the way that he was able to surprisingly finish Yuri Alcantara. And then he has shown a little bit of striking with the finish of Damian Stasiak, and he outstruck and was able to get a takedown a little bit against Hayden Burrell as Burrell started to slow down in that fight. But against John Lineker, I don't see Lineker slowing down. Lineker has those heavy hands that he trusts, and he has that insane chin that he also trusts, and he's willing to wade forward, eat a shot if he needs to, and land something nasty. Kelleher is, he's a guy that absorbs about as often as he takes in terms of his striking defense. I mean, he lands about 5.5 a minute, but he eats about 5.5 a minute. You don't want to be eating 5.5 John Lineker shots per minute. It's just not good for your health. So if this fight stays standing, I think John Lineker either wins by knockout or just does enough damage to make Kelleher really defensive and turtle up a little bit on the feet and fight on his back foot. And Lineker would win a decision that way. The only realistic path to victory for Kelleher is to get takedowns, get top position, and try to either grind this out or try to submit Lineker. Lineker has been controlled on the ground by guys like Ali Bagatinov, by TJ Dillashaw had a really great game plan against him in the when he battled him in a bantamweight fight. So there is the path to victory here for Kelleher, but I just don't think that his takedowns are good enough to overcome Lineker's takedown defense. Lineker really only gets taken down by really, really good wrestlers, and I just don't think Kelleher's that good of a wrestler. So my pick is going to be John Lineker. I think that those heavy hands of stone are going to find a home and do some serious damage on Kelleher. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Mackenzie Dern, who is 6-0, taking on Amanda Bobby Cooper, who is 4-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Dern opened -530, the comeback on Cooper +350. And right now, looking over BetDSI, it's actually Dern -249, the comeback on Cooper +199. So what happened here is everybody coming in Cooper's way. Nobody really that impressed with Mackenzie Dern. She is the woman with all the hype, with all the recognition. A lot of people were, I don't want to compare her to Ronda Rousey, but a lot of people were expecting her, man, a chick that has all the jiu-jitsu accolades. I mean, she's one of the best women jiu-jitsu practitioners of all time. I mean, that's how decorated she is in this sport. And coming into MMA, a lot of people were expecting her to just automatically translate that, you know, amazingly, like come in, get the fight to the floor, just, you know, sub everybody quick like and be done with it. And it's not that easy because she's had to put the work in to get the, you know, the wrestling aspect of it down. She's had to put the striking in to set things up. And then once she gets on the ground, of course, you know, she hasn't been able to submit all of her opponents yet. So I think a lot of people have been let down by Mackenzie Dern, and they look at her striking and they see sloppiness because she's so aggressive, and they're just not impressed. And if they look at Cooper, they see the striking's clean. She's more seasoned a little bit. She's just, I think, a more ready fighter at this point, a lot of people believe, is the case here. So I think that's why you're seeing all the dog action, because Mackenzie Dern's wrestling isn't that great. Cooper does have a bit of a wrestling background and a decent ground game, but her best attributes definitely on the feet and the striking. So I think a lot of people think that Mackenzie Dern is going to fail in the takedown attempts here and get beat up on the feet. And if she's not able to get this fight to the floor, I do think she could be in some trouble against Cooper, because Cooper, there's no doubt about it. Cooper has the better boxing. She's the cleaner striker. She could be the more effective striker. But with all the aggressive sloppiness that everybody's pretty much hinting at with Mackenzie Dern, I've been pretty much impressed at this stage of her career. I mean, being able to implement some striking and being aggressive and not having that fear to get in the pocket and exchange and to absorb punches. I mean, she showed toughness. I've heard a lot of, I don't want to say negativity, but I've heard a lot of bad things. I mean, even in camp, I've heard, you know, she's not training with MMA Lab at this point anymore. She actually was told to leave the camp. Now, again, I don't know what the background completely is about that, but supposedly she wasn't able to make it into, to camp as often as the guys over at the lab wanted. So they basically let her go, you know, train where she could more comfortably for her as well. So better situation for her. She moved out to California. She's training with the crew at Black House. Primarily out there. So she's happy. Seems like she's content with that stuff. Now, I mean, we'll see how she performs here, obviously, you know, for this fight, but I don't think it's going to matter too much. I think that a lot of people are misguided here. I think this is actually an easier fight for Mackenzie Dern. You look at the fight that she had in her official debut against Yoder, and people are saying, man, she barely got that fight. She deserved to win that fight. It was definitely a close, it was a split decision type of fight. I don't think it was a split. I think Mackenzie Dern did deserve to win, that fight. And I think this fight's actually a little bit easier. I think she's going to be able to get Cooper down to the ground, and it's a no-brainer out there. You guys, I think you're all wasting your money coming in on Cooper, to be honest with you, in this spot here. The UFC is setting Mackenzie Dern up with a gift here. I mean, Cooper is a 500 fighter. She loses her fights by submission, and they're giving her a submission chick. I mean, it is what it is. It's pretty clear to me that this is a stepping stone for Mackenzie Dern. Her aggressiveness is going to be able to close that gap. She's going to be able to get this fight to the ground. And once she gets this fight to the ground, she's going to be able to submit Amanda Cooper. If she doesn't submit her, she's going to be able to get position and start pounding away and probably beat her that way as well. So to me, this is easy pickings for Mackenzie Dern. I kind of agree. I think the opening line, even though it was a tad bit high, it was still a little bit more accurate where the number is probably now here at this point. And I do have respect for Cooper, so I don't want to make it out to be like, hey, I'm a Cooper hater. I think she's not a good fighter. I think she is a solid fighter. I just think that this nightmare matchup here that she has against Dern isn't going to go well for her. I just think that a lot of people are underestimating Dern at this spot, and that's why all the money's coming in on Cooper. So I think you're all wasting your time. You're wasting your money. I think Mackenzie Dern is going to come in, perform really well, get a highlight reel type of victory in her backyard in Brazil, and she's going to be impressive in doing so. And then we'll see what happens from there. She has a lot of improvement to make for sure. She needs to get cleaner. I get it. She definitely can improve her overall game. But at this stage, for how raw she kind of still is, I see her passion. I see her wanting to get better and her toughness. And with the skill set she has, she's still going to win some fights. If the UFC feeds her the right competition like they are now, she's going to be on her way to doing some good things and getting better. So the pick is Mackenzie Dern to actually get the job done and submit Amanda Cooper.
Yeah, this fight boils down to one thing. Can Mackenzie Dern get this fight to the floor? If she can, she's going to win. I mean, Amanda Bobby Cooper is 4-3. All three losses are by submission. Granted, you look at who those losses are to, and that does make things interesting. I mean, Aspen Ladd, Tatiana Suarez, Cynthia Calvillo. Ladd is an undefeated fighter in the bantamweight division now. And then Suarez and Calvillo are two of the better fighters in the women's strawweight division. So it's not like she lost to nobodies. That being said, you know, she still lost, and Mackenzie Dern is probably the most dangerous submission fighter of all three of them. So if Amanda Bobby Cooper is on her back, she is going to lose. That being said, Mackenzie Dern, you know, doesn't have the greatest takedowns. I mean, her takedown accuracy after her UFC debut is just 16%. I mean, Yoder was able to stuff most of those takedowns and really try to pick Dern apart. Dern does have power on the feet, but she's not technical. And Yoder was able to land some good shots. She actually hurt Dern at one point. So that is the major concern here, is that Dern can't close the distance, can't drag this to the floor, and this turns into a striking battle that Cooper can win. Cooper is a decent enough striker. She beat somebody with a striking background in Anna Almos. And then in her last fight, you know, she dominated Angela Magana. Granted, you know, Magana was probably one of the worst fighters in the strawweight division. Now, Dern, there are some issues there. I mean, it seems like she's focused a little bit too much on having a good time and going to the beach and posting pictures on her Instagram and videos. So is she taking her MMA career seriously? That is a legitimate cause for concern. But I think Amanda Bobby Cooper, while she's talented, I just don't think that she'll be able to hang with Dern, especially once this fight does go to the floor. And if Dern can at least close the distance, get this fight to the clinch, that'll open up an opportunity to drag it to the floor, and she should be able to win. But if that doesn't happen, I mean, if it looks like Dern is just lost out there, then potentially this could be a fight where you might want to lay some money on Cooper in between the first and second rounds if Dern just looks like she has no chance of getting a takedown. So My pick is Dern, but I am legitimately concerned here about her prospects as an elite MMA fighter until she really commits. So, moving on, we are heading to the co-main event of the evening. We have Jacare Souza, who is 25-5 with one no contest, taking on Kelvin Gastelum, who is 15-3 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA Oddsmakers perspective on this one?
Jacare Souza opens -135. Gastelum opens -105. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's currently Jacare Souza at -145. The comeback on Gastelum's at +115. So line margins have tightened up. There's two-way action coming into this fight. The opening line seems fair and seems solid where it is now because it's basically maintaining at that spot. Just a little bit more action coming in Jacare's way. But there is two-way action getting bet on this fight as well because a lot of people think Gastelum is a live dog. And he very well could be. This is another spot where it is very hard to trust Jacare. And the main reason being, he's 38 years old and that chin. I mean, he's three of his losses have been by knockout and that chin is not going to get any better. He's getting older. Like I said, if his chin did held up better, if I could trust it better, this line would be way higher than what it is now, because even though Gastelum is a very good fighter, he's got that explosive power for being that wrestler. I still think he's undersized middleweight. Now he makes up for it with his skill, athleticism, and that power, and again, that wrestling background that he has, so he can make up for it. But against elite-level skilled fighters in the middleweight division that are going to outsize him and that can kind of match him in skill, or like a guy like Jacare, a guy like Weidman, he's just undersized in this spot. So I think that's going to play a big role here in this fight as well. Jacare, I think he has underrated wrestling, honestly. I think he has underrated striking as well. I mean, I wouldn't be out of the realm that Jacare does okay on the feet with Gastelum. Now, I don't think he wants to play that game too much because, again, even though offensively Jacare is capable of landing solid kicks, he's landing solid punches and has some power. He's got some knockout power on the feet. His chin just can't absorb it as much, and I think there's a good chance that Gastelum does end up eventually landing, catching that chin if the longer does stay up on the feet. So make no mistake about it, Jacare Souza has to get this fight to the ground. But once on the ground, Jacare, even though Gastelum has a very solid ground game overall for the most part, Jacare is going to have his way with him. I mean, I don't think there's much Gastelum can do once Jacare has him on the ground. So I think you're going to see a jiu-jitsu master just go to work right away and just implement his domination on the ground against Gastelum, probably take his back, choke him out. So I think that I'm leaning a little bit more towards Jacare in this fight because I think if he doesn't get clipped by Gastelum, he's going to win the fight. And I think that he is the better fighter overall. He's going to have the size to go along with it as well. So hard for me not to pick Jacare in this spot. But it's not a confident pick because of the chin. And that's basically it. I mean, it comes down to that. Can Gastelum land and clip him and put him out? Sure he can. So that's where I'm concerned, I guess, for Jacare at this point, more than anything else. But I mean, in my opinion, there's no mistake about it. Jacare is definitely the better fighter and hopefully he shows here and he gets the job done, 'cause I'm going to pick him to win. So, Jacare is the pick. I think he does get the job done by submission here in this fight over Gastelum.
Yeah. Jacare is definitely going to be the bigger fighter here. Gastelum will be obviously younger, a little bit more explosive. Both guys have a lot of power on the feet. Both guys are very dangerous. Both guys are susceptible if they get hit with a big power strike. We've seen Gastelum hurt by Chris Weidman. We've seen Gastelum hurt by Rick Story. We've seen Jacare hurt by Yoel Romero. We've seen Jacare hurt and finished by the champion. So I think that this fight will be extremely interesting because on the feet, both are dangerous, and on the ground, obviously Jacare has a huge edge. I mean, he is one of the best Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners to ever transition to mixed martial arts. He is extremely capable and dangerous on the floor. And as Nick mentioned, Kelvin Gastelum, he got taken down by Neil Magny at the welterweight division. So if Magny can do it, I definitely think Jacare can do it. It just all depends on Jacare finding that right moment. I mean, he can't just shoot in from way outside and telegraph a takedown. He needs to set it up. He needs to get inside and wait for Gastelum to throw a big punch and duck under it and drag him to the floor. And if Jacare can get Gastelum on his back, I think he's in a good position. Especially with this being a 3-round fight as opposed to a 5-round fight, it makes it more realistic that Jacare could win a decision with the ground. Because on the feet, you're playing with fire either way. Jacare has a ton of power, both with his hands and his feet. As you saw, he hurt Derek Brunson in his last fight, that rematch. He hurt him with a kick before he finished him with strikes. And Gastelum obviously has heavy hands. He's very dangerous. He put away Michael Bisping with ease in their fight. And Gastelum looked good against Tim Kennedy. He looked really good against Johnny Hendricks. I mean, he's just a dangerous out. He destroyed Vitor Belfort. So I will not count out Kelvin Gastelum against anybody because, you know, he is on that quest for gold if you've looked at his Twitter handle. But I think that Jacare just has a little bit more skill. The only real issue for me with Jacare is that he is starting to get older and he might be starting to slow down. Granted, he's been getting older for a long time and he is still just such an elite athlete that it didn't matter, kind of like Yoel Romero. So if, you know, he hasn't started to slow down enough, then I think that this is Jacare's fight to lose. Jacare has the power to hang with Gastelum on the feet, the explosiveness to hang with Gastelum on the feet, and obviously he has the ground game that he can go to if he needs it. So Jacare is going to be my pick, but Gastelum's hands are definitely something that I am going to be concerned about because if he can really crack Jacare, he can put him away. So I am picking Jacare, but I'm definitely a little nervous about extended stand-up exchanges. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening, a women's bantamweight title fight between champion Amanda Nunes, who is 15-4, and challenger Raquel Pennington, who is 9-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Nunes opened -530, the comeback on Pennington +350. Right now over at BetDSI, -948 for Nunes, the comeback on Pennington at +623. So needless to say, some steam hitting Nunes, especially the last few days here. Just not a lot of love for Pennington coming in at the sports books. And I mean, I think her popularity as a whole in the MMA community is not that great either, but man, she deserves some respect. I mean, if you look at Pennington throughout her career, she's put the work in. She's gotten herself to the point where she is now. She deserves this title shot. I mean, you know, she's just gotten better fight by fight, and the competition level that she's faced throughout her career, she deserves respect for sure. I mean, she's coming off of a solid win over Miesha Tate. And, you know, just a couple years back, who would have thought that that would happen, actually, that Pennington would put herself in this position. So, again, I take my hat off to her because I think even though a lot of people aren't giving her the respect in this title fight against Nunes, I think she deserves to be here. And I think it's going to make for an interesting fight because Pennington actually matches up fairly well with Nunes to some degree. Now, again, I know that she's a huge underdog here, so I'm not going to pick her to win the fight. And I think Nunes has showed me a lot lately. Talk about improvement, man. I mean, the champion herself has improved so much throughout the years. I mean, her takedown defense, she's always been a really good, solid striker, but her takedown defense, her wrestling offense, I mean, overall, even her conditioning in the last fight, you know, against Shevchenko, it showed up pretty well. I mean, and that's usually her biggest flaw. Now, again, the pace of the fight, people can say what they want, but still, Nunes has showed us improvements, and she is one of the most feared strikers in all of women's combat sports. I mean, she has a ton of power. She has accuracy. She has confidence now. Nunes is just a tough out. I mean, she's going to be hard to dethrone for a lot of these ladies out there. But Pennington, I'm saying she matches up fairly well with her because this is basically a striker versus striker type of matchup. And Pennington's boxing is underrated. And now, again, both of these ladies are more well-rounded than that. Pennington has showed us some solid ground game as of late. She's capable of pulling off submission wins as well. But I think it's going to be hard for Pennington to drag Nunes to the ground. Nunes's takedown defense is pretty solid. It should maintain here. And then on the feet, Nunes is the harder puncher. I think she has better defense overall as well. And I think these ladies are going to be exchanging, and Pennington's going to have her moments in this fight, but I think ultimately it's going to be Nunes who is getting the more effective blows in and getting the job done here. So I am going to pick Nunes to win. I'm going to be pulling for Pennington, though. I think I want this to be an exciting fight. I don't want this to look like a 10-1 type of favorite going out there and just demolishing the underdog here. I want it to be an exciting fight. I want it to be it's just a kind of a classic battle that Pennington shows up and just overperforms all of our expectations, really. So hoping it's a good fight. again, hats off to Pennington for making it this far, and really curious to see how good Nunes is going to look in this fight, and if she can show, just keep on showing improvements that she's made in the past. So again, respect for both these ladies. I'm glad that they're headlining this event because they deserve that as well overall. Should be a good card from top to bottom. Overall, I'm picking Nunes to maintain and remain the champion here at 135 pounds.
Oh, Raquel Pennington deserves the title shot. I mean, you get four wins in a row in the women's bantamweight division, especially with how shallow that division is right now, then you definitely do deserve the shot, especially with that last win being over Misha Tate. She basically retired Misha Tate with that win. That being said, you know, she suffered an injury. They originally were going to have Pennington fight Nunes a long time ago, but then she got hurt, and Nunes ended up being sidelined as well. But it's finally happening, thankfully. It's about a year and a half since Pennington has fought, which is a bit of an issue. I think she's going to be a bit rusty. Pennington does have a decent enough striking style, but, I mean, she just is not the athlete that Amanda Nunes is. She doesn't have that explosiveness to her striking. She doesn't have Nunes' power. If they're trading punch for punch, Pennington is going to get hurt badly. Realistically, the best path to victory for Pennington is to just try to slow this fight down, grind it out, get into the clinch, try to wear Nunes down a little bit, because even though Nunes went all five rounds against Shevchenko in her last fight, I still am fully behind the fact that she has conditioning issues. The reason that she was able to go all five rounds in her last fight was because Shevchenko didn't really push her. I mean, that was just a sparring match for five rounds. It was a frustrating fight. I don't know what Shevchenko was really doing. Pennington, I think she's smarter than that. If she knows that if she just stays in open space, that she could be a bit of a sitting duck here for Nunes. So if she can close the distance and try to get this to the fence, get this to the floor, just ugly up the fight a little bit, then that gives her the best path to victory. And then once Nunes starts to slow down, maybe Pennington's strikes will start to land a little bit more consistently. There'll be a little bit less zip on Nunes's punches. She can absorb them and survive them. But early on in this fight, Nunes is going to be extremely dangerous, and there's a potential at any moment in the first two rounds, or three rounds even, that Nunes could knock Pennington out. And that's honestly the most likely path to victory for, or most likely outcome of this fight for me. I think Nunes is just above and beyond Pennington's skill level, and she should win this fight. I mean, unless Pennington can close that distance and take away Nunes's striking, then I think Nunes dominates. So my pick is going to be Nunes. I'm sure Pennington has a decent game plan here to try to nullify Nunes' striking, but I just don't think it'll work because I just don't think Pennington's a good enough athlete. So I think Nunes does land some heavy shots, and I think Nunes does win this fight by TKO or knockout at some point in the first two rounds. So Amanda Nunes retains the belt is my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 224. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.